You are listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jerry Knapp.
Hello, Raider Nation. Welcome to another edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack, and I'm joined by a very special guest this week. I don't think kickers get enough love, so we are going to have one of the greatest kickers in Raiders history on the show. He played for the Raiders for 7 years. He is still the fourth leading scorer in team history. Please welcome to the program, Mr. Jeff Jaeger. Jeff, how are you?
Doing great, Jerry. Doing great.
You know, it's been a while since we talked. We discussed playing the Broncos three times in 1993 was the last time you and I chatted.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. Yeah, so, Jeff, we like to do here on the show is kind of start from the beginning. You know, how did you get into the game of football?
Well, I think probably similar to, you know, a lot of kids. You know, when you're young, well, I guess actually, now it seems like kids are getting pretty specialized in by the time they get to high school, you know, picking one sport or another. But for me, back when I was young, you know, I played football, baseball, basketball, just like everybody else did. And I think it was in fourth grade when I started playing, but, you know, just with all my buddies, just kind of fell into, you know, playing and just like a lot of people do.
When you talk about getting specialized, I have a friend of mine I graduated from high school with. We won't talk about how long ago. And her son is now a kicker at Brockport State in Western New York. And you know, you just follow along on social media, and he's been going to all the kicking camps and doing all of that. It seems like he picked wanted to be a kicker very, very early on.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, I've got a couple of kids that I help a little bit, and it's amazing now. You know, you look at, you know, kids starting earlier, getting coaching. I think there's a little bit less of a, I don't know if you want to call it taboo or whatever, about being a kicker and just a kicker. And, you know, I've had this conversation before. I mean, I look at kickers in the NFL now, and it's like, holy smokes, hard holding on to a job now. You know, it's just a different generation. I mean, they're bigger, stronger, been getting great, you know, coaching since they were little. You know, and heck, I think back, heck, I had to figure out a lot of stuff on my own, you know, kind of trial and error stuff. And it's pretty interesting to see now, you know. So there's a lot of guys that, you know, choose to do it and get really good at it quickly.
You probably spent a lot of times with a lot of time by yourself with a bag of footballs.
Absolutely. I'd drag my dad out and come on, Dad, let's go. Yeah, so, yeah, it's definitely a solitary thing. That's for sure.
Especially when you miss, but we'll get it. Right? Nobody talks to you when you miss. Jeff, you grew up in Washington State and went to the University of Washington. How did you end up a Husky?
Born and raised in Seattle, and I always wanted to go to University of Washington, and you know, my timing was actually pretty good. I walked on after Chuck Nelson left. Chuck played I think about 6 years in the league, through the Rams and Bills and Vikings, and you know, so when I got there, there was only one guy competing for the job, and kind of lucked out in that regard, just, you know, timing. And so it was a fun run, get to play there, and I was glad to do it.
Well, if that timing was fortuitous, your entry into the NFL was kind of not, right? 1987 was a strike year in the NFL. You come into the league with the Cleveland Browns. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah, well, I don't believe me. That was, you know, for me growing up on the West Coast, and Marty Schottenheimer was the coach, and calls me up, you know, hey, you ready to be a Cleveland Brown? I was like, oh, man. You know, for me, that felt like the dark side of the moon. When Plan B free agency came out, so I get to go out to L.A. and play for the Raiders, which was, they were my team growing up, so I was really happy to get the chance.
Yeah, what happened in 88 after your 87 season with Cleveland? You didn't play in any games in 88.
Yeah, so if you go back, I had an interesting, you know, career path in terms of crossing paths with the Barr brothers. So Matt Barr blew his knee out in the playoffs in 86, and that's the only time they drafted me. They weren't sure if he was going to be able to come back or not. And so late in my rookie year, they brought him off IR, and you know, he finished in 88. You know, that we were just going to have competition to kill us. And I injured my foot, you know, like the joint on the top of my foot, and I bent my toes back. And anyway, it was like a legit weak injury. They just put me on injury reserve and, you know, stuck me there for the whole year. Back in the day, when it was Heidi on that. You know, the third round pick, so I think there was at least some feel at the time. Let's see if we can, you know, keep him around or whatever. And so that was 88. Then in 89, that's, you know, like, you know, spring of 89, that's when I signed with the Raiders. And, you know, with Plan B free agency, you know, back then you could protect 35 guys. And Matt and I were on the roster. And they didn't protect either one of us, knowing that whoever left, the other one would stay. So that's how that worked. And then I show up with the Raiders, and Chris Barr, you know, I ended up replacing him. But so interesting, you know, the Barr brothers.
You know, it does seem to be unconventional how the Raiders got their kickers for a number of years. You know, coming over to the Raiders, you join a team with a rich history at the position. You go all the way back to even Gene Mingo. I think, you know, Al Davis was one of the first coaches in not only American Football League history, but pro football history that kind of valued specialists, right? So you had, you know, some guys in the 60s that came in, and then obviously in 1967 with the acquisition of George Blanda, it really set the, you know, no pun intended, set the bar pretty high, especially when it came to theatrics and game-winning kicks. And then in 1976, the Raiders drafted a guy named Fred Steinfort, and he gets hurt, and Errol Mann comes along, and Errol Mann's a kicker for a couple of years. He's replaced by Jim Breach. Breach ends up in Cincinnati, and then Chris Barr ends up with the Raiders. And it wasn't a trade. It was almost like a free agent swap, right, kind of thing. And then, then you know, Chris is just ahead of you on the scoring list in Raiders history. He made plenty of dramatic kicks during his career. But for you, with the Raiders in 89, your first game-winning kick for the Raiders came against the New England Patriots, a 32-yarder.
Hey, wow. Well, you got a better memory than me.
I used the interwebs for that one.
There you go. Yeah, I happened to sneak one in there. Yeah.
And then you did it again the next week in overtime against Denver, 16-13 with a 26-yard field goal. Kind of been looking at, and not only some game winners that you had, but some other interesting moments that you had during your career. Twice did you, actually more than that, three times did you score all the points in a victory. You scored all 12 points against San Francisco in a 12-6 win in 91, and then all nine points in a 9-7 win over San Diego. You had a 53-yarder in that game.
Nice.
Yeah, and then in 93 you had all 12 points and another win over the Chargers, 12-7 down in San Diego at what they used to call Jack Murphy Stadium. Did you ever think, you know, I mean, obviously every point matters, right? Extra point, field goal, touchdown, whatever, safety. But did you ever think that you'd actually win a game and you'd be the only person scored in the game?
Honestly, from the kicking perspective on that, you never really think, you know, that you're going to get enough field goals to, you know, straight up win simply with field goals. So, yeah, it's kind of an odd thing when that does happen, that's for sure.
You know, one of the other things that I discovered this a few years ago that I found absolutely fascinating, and, you know, you didn't exactly you know, have a weak leg, you definitely had like mid-50s range. And the first player to ever kick a 54-yard field goal in Raiders history was a guy named George Fleming. He was a draft pick in 1961. He was a running back out of the University of Washington.
Yep.
And it took, I don't know how many years because I'm really, really bad at math, but the next person to kick a 54-yard field goal in Raiders history was Jeff Jaeger.
Oh, hey. I think we'll just take the next leap and look at how many 55-yarder plus Janikowski made.
Yeah, I was getting there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, just kind of the evolution of the position. You know, I mean, I think, you know, getting better snaps and holds and, you know, and then, you know, I think that helped, you know, get to where maybe, you know, my era of guys, you know, got better. But then, again, looking at the guys now, you know, I mean, heck, seems like long snappers never miss, you know, ball's right there, piece of cake, you know, excellent holds and all those. So it is interesting watching the guys now, that's for sure.
Yeah, there are a lot of big legs in the National Football League these days, you know. You know, we always talk about Ray Guy here and how he set the standard for punters, but you look at some of the big legs now, it seems to be normal now.
Oh, it's crazy, yeah.
You know, that 54-yarder, actually, that record stood for 31 years, and that 54-yarder you hit was a 92 to beat the Giants 13-10. That was one of your game-winning field goals during your career.
Hey, one of those deals, I remember I missed one earlier in the game, so I needed to make that one. So needless to say, I was happy I made it, that's for sure.
You know, again, we go back to the whole every point matters, right? And it seems like in a lot of the box scores that I looked at from your career, if you didn't hit the game winner, you hit a field goal in the fourth quarter that made it a two-score game. Those seem to be just as important as that game winner, right? I mean, to be able to pad the lead and make it that much more difficult for the other team to be able to put points on the board in those critical situations?
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of interesting. I call it kicker math, you know, just kind of that same thing, you know, when it's, you know, when you can get it to two scores or three or whatever it is, you know, and I think a lot of people don't really look at it that way, but yeah. Absolutely, those are important kicks. No doubt about it. Changes how the team plays, you know, strategically the rest of the game. That's for sure.
So in '92, you hit an extra point against the Redskins in a really tight ball game to give the Raiders a 21-20 lead. Did you approach extra points any differently in those situations, or was that even more nerve-wracking because back then it was, you know, it was basically a 20-yard field goal. It's considered a chip shot. Those things had to be just as nerve-wracking as a game-winning kick or field goal from distance, right?
You know, not really, because, you know, PATs, before they changed the rule, I mean, all you got to do is pay attention and, you know, you'll make it. So even in that situation, you know, where, of course, you know, tie game and you need to make it, I mean, you're definitely not, you know, as nervous as you would be on, say, you know, a 38-yarder, you know, one that, of course, you should make, but still got to go through the process. So PATs, you know, I never was really that worried about it, you know, when I played. However, watching these guys now, oh my gosh, I tell you, I as a kicker and a fan, I love watching it because PATs are no longer a layup, so it's an interesting twist on the game from my perspective. I enjoy watching it.
Yeah, and if you return one clean, you get points out of the deal.
Hey, I know.
You know, so that's that added element, because now everybody on the kick team has to be paying attention to what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, that's for sure. I know you need to pay attention. That's for sure.
Well, I wanted to touch a little bit on that 93 season, you know, that we talked about the last time we had the opportunity to chat. It was a pretty magical season in that you did have that rare feat of beating a team three times. You beat the Broncos three times in 93, twice in the regular season, once in the playoffs. And the regular season games, that was all you. That was, as far as you being in the middle of it. You had a 53-yard field goal to beat Denver on Monday Night Football, which, you know, anytime the Raiders are on Monday Night Football, it's a thing. And the Raiders and Broncos have met more times than any other teams in the history of the series. And then you hit a 47-yard field goal to beat Denver in overtime, and that was a playoff clinching kick.
Yeah, that was that was a really cool one. I got to admit, to get the playoffs and, under the gun like that, it was definitely a great memory, that's for sure.
Well, during that time, you had some great battles between the Raiders and the Broncos, and it just seemed fitting that it was going to come down to last-second field goals to advance your cause.
It's amazing. I think you see, like at that time, we did really well against Denver, and the Chiefs did really well against us. It always seems like there's teams that you play well against, or, they play, good against you, or, it's kind of strange. But, Denver, and actually when I went and played in Chicago, I played Denver a couple other times and had good games against them, too. I don't know why. I wish I could have played them every week.
Well, is there anything to that whole thing about kicking in Denver as far as the ball traveling farther, or is this, a myth? Oh, is this a thing?
Absolutely. It makes a ton of difference. I know the record 64 now, but was that done in Denver? I think that was done in Denver.
That was done in Denver, and Janikowski tied it with a 63-yarder in Denver.
Exactly. For me, it's like, Janikowski, holy smokes, he could bomb it from anywhere. But, I'm sure he'll tell you, kicking up there, it's just different. You don't have to, don't have to swing as hard. And when you do, click it, hit it well, it just goes.
You've always struck me as kind of a student of the game. During your time, there seemed to be, some really, really good kickers around the league. Buffalo had a pretty good kicker in Steve Christie. And, there's some other guys around the league that were pretty accurate and pretty clutch during the time you were playing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, when I was playing, I think of Morton Anderson and Nick Lowry. For my money, Morton Anderson getting in the Hall of Fame, absolutely. Not only was he great on, longer kicks and clutch, but he kicked off and was great at it. So, it was pretty cool to, say, hey, I played against those guys, because they were great, definitely really good.
Did you ever, learn technique from anybody? I remember when Shane Leckler came in the league, Darren Bennett was an influence on him, and Bennett was the punter for the Chargers, and he was an Aussie rules player who came over to the NFL. And did you ever take a look at what the other guys did technique wise, or was it Jeff Jager in a vacuum like we were talking about earlier?
Oh no, see, I learned something about halfway through my career from Norm Johnson. Played for the Seahawks and Falcons and Eagles, and just taught me a little something on my steps just to be more consistent. And man, I tell you what, I tell my kids when I'm working with them, to this day, I still tell them, hey, he made the difference for me, because I feel like I was okay. I thought I was pretty good on kickoffs and, decent on field goals, but, you can always do better. And feel like I did much better after a little tune-up I got from Norm that I carried with me the rest of my career. It was pretty cool. It was nice to, have somebody like that, kind of say, hey, have you thought about this? And it worked.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because, you look at other positions and you think, this quarterback is studying these other quarterbacks, either that came before or that are in the league now, and they borrow all kinds of different things. You do think of kicking as this solitary activity, and it's interesting that you were able to learn something from Norm Johnson, who was a pretty good kicker and played a long time in the National Football League.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I guess I kind of look at it like a kind of a fraternity type thing. It is very solitary. I get that part of it. But, you know, I look at it like, you know, helping other guys. Why wouldn't you? You know, because, I mean, I'm still in charge of myself. I need to go out and I got to perform, you know. And, you know, so it's not a man-on-man battle like you know, D-lineman, offensive tackle, that kind of thing. You know, so it's a little, from my perspective, it was always a little different in terms of talking with the other guys and, you know, sharing, you know, hey, hold the wind down, this end does a little something or whatever.
Right. Raider Nation, you're listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack, and I am joined on the phone with former Raiders kicker and fourth leading scorer in team history, Jeff Jaeger. Jeff, you know, when you came to the Raiders in the late 1980s, did you have a sense of the history at the position with the Raiders?
Not really. You know, as I said earlier, you know, the Raiders were my team growing up. My mom has a picture of me and for my 8th birthday wearing my Oakland Raiders sweatshirt. So I was really excited to get to be a Raider and got to golf a couple times with George Blanda. And, you know, so you kind of, you know, of course, I mean, who didn't know George Blanda, you know? And then to your point about, you know, the history, you know, part of it, obviously, and then you go back and, you know, see some of the great kicks he made and you know, Chris Barr, I mean, what a run he had, you know, before I got there. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, then you Ray Guy and, you know, start looking on the punting side of it. And there have been some really great specialists there for sure. Absolutely.
You know, if you take a look at the beginning of Chris Barr's career with the Raiders, he kind of started off with a thud. There were a few games that he just couldn't hit the broadside of an aircraft carrier. And the Raiders stuck with him. And you know, after a couple of years, he's the kicker on a Super Bowl winning team in 80, again in 83. But, you know, during that time period, Chris made a lot of huge game winning kicks and was a key part of that run. You look at today's NFL and you look at the current Raiders kicker, Daniel Carlson, he was cut after one game. Has the mentality here changed? Because I think recently another kicker was waived after, you know, missing four field goals in a game.
Mm-hmm. You know, the thing for me, I was reading an article, Phil Dawson, that he was talking about, you know, a lot of NFL teams just don't get it. You know, that they cut guys way too soon. And I can go back and, you know, I can think of like in 89, I mean, I had a couple of games that not good. And, you know, Mr. Davis stayed with me. And I mean, I like to think I had a pretty decent run. And, you know, in today's NFL, I don't think I would have had the opportunity to do that. You know, just the way a lot of teams, they're like, oh, well, we'll go get another kicker. It's not as easy as that, you know, and I think the teams that do a really good job are more, I don't know if you want to say, you know, embrace their kicker in the sense that, you know, hey, if you miss one, don't sweat it. And they legitimately mean it. You know, they're not running in five guys for a tryout on Tuesday after you have a bad game. You know, it's like, hey, relax, go do your thing. I know you can do it. Mr. Davis, you know, I multiple times came up to me and said, hey, don't worry about it, kid. You're fine. Let's go. And needless to say, of course, that vote of confidence, you know, meant a lot. And I think it really helped me, you know, over the course of my career, for sure.
Yeah, you take a look at the time period that you played and some of the names you mentioned earlier, but we could mention even more NFL kickers that had long runs. With one team or even two and three teams, like you talked about Norm Johnson, you mentioned Matt Barr, but you look at guys like Rolf Benerschke and Uwe von Schaman and some of those guys from, you know, the going from the late 70s into the throughout the 80s. And you know, in 2000, the Raiders draft Sebastian Janikowski, who goes on this 17-year run, which in today's NFL is now pretty much unheard of. He ends his Raiders career with, you know, almost 1,800 points, all-time leading scorer in team history, set the record for most 50-yard field goals in NFL history, has kicked the longest field goals in Raiders history, 55 on up, as you mentioned earlier. And
yeah, a ton of them.
Yeah, and, you know, he's got like the 8 or 9 longest kicks in team history from 55 up to 63. I saw him in Cleveland kick a 61-yarder in December, and that had to be like kicking a brick.
Oh, for sure. I mean, flat out. I mean, that dude, physically a freak. And I mean that as a total compliment. I mean, holy smokes. I mean, the ball coming off his foot, just unreal. Very impressive.
Well, he kicked the longest field goal to win an overtime game in NFL history with a 57-yarder against the Jets in 2008. And, you know, I think I saw every one of his kicks with the Raiders. I missed a few when he finished his career with the Seahawks. But I think I saw either in person or on television with the very few games that I missed, I think I saw every one of his extra points and field goals.
Oh, hey, man. Yeah, there were a lot of good ones, that's for sure. Absolutely.
Well, there was, I think it was 2010 or 2011, that he was just so accurate from any distance. He was knocking in 50-yarders like Steph Curry drains three-pointers, right?
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, I mean, part of it, you know, and I've never talked to him about it, but just the way it always seemed to me in watching him, you know, like a 50-yarder, heck, he didn't have to swing that hard. And, you know, that's a testament to his, you know, just his physical strength. And, you know, he just looked like he's just, you know, ho-hum, just chipping it out there, and boom, 50-yarder. I mean, heck, that's not even – distance is never an issue for that guy, ever.
Yeah, they always talk about, you know, on TV now, they go into a game and they'll tell you that, you know, whatever kicker's in the game had a conversation with the coach pregame. He says, I feel comfortable from here. Did you have those conversations, or did they just put you out there because, hey, Jeff, we need a field goal here?
When I was in Chicago, I'm playing for Dave Wannstedt. He would always ask me. When Steve Ortmeier was our team's coach, he would always ask me. So, you know, generally speaking, you know, that's a conversation you're going to have with, you know, if not the head coach, at least the special teams coach. And yeah, so they have some idea, you know.
How often, setting up for, like, the game-winning kicks, do they come to you and say, hey, Jeff, what hash do you want it on? Where do you want the ball? Did they ever do that?
Yeah. And, you know, when you have the opportunity to set it up where you'd like, that's, you know, that's obviously ideal, but, you know, heck, you know, when you think about it, it's actually harder to kick field goals in college than the pros with the hash marks. You know, the pros just hit it straight and you're good. So I didn't really let that get in my head too much about which hash it is.
And you played in old Husky Stadium too. I can only imagine. You just were happy to, you know, kick the ball straight, I would imagine, once you got in the later part of the season.
I know, that's kind of one of those things where, yeah, heck, I played there, played in Cleveland, played in Chicago. And so, yeah, I played in some bad weather spots. But, you know, oftentimes, truly, you know, if you just put a good swing on it, and you'll be okay. You know, and again, that's just an experience thing, you know, get out of your own way and, you know, let your skill show. But sometimes that's hard to do, as we all know.
So those years in L.A. were pretty good.
Really enjoyed them. Absolutely.
Perfect weather almost every game. You don't have to worry about, you know, wind and rain and snow and sleet and all that stuff. You know, you alluded to it a minute ago about the new extra point rule, right? It's now a 33-yard field goal. But it does seem like every year or two or three, they – want to change rules for kickers. So it's you know, we're going to kick off from the 30. Well, we need to do something with kickoff return, so we're going to kick off from the 35. Okay, now on a touchback, it comes out to the 25. It just seems like they can't get this part of the game where they want it. They want player safety. They want these different things. But, no, we need the excitement of the kickoff return. And now the way it is, there's no more wedges. They have to stand still when the ball is kicked, so they've effectively taken the onside kick out of the game. What are your thoughts on all these different rule changes over the years that affect kickers?
First thing, like on the PAT, I like it because I don't have to do it. I mean, if they had done that while I was playing, I'd be like, oh, my gosh. Because that's a legit, you know, it's like a three-foot putt. You know, a flat 3-foot putt. All you got to do is take the club back and go through and hold your form and you're fine. Well, that could be a little problematic, you know, get some wind or whatever, you know, like I was saying before, you know, when I was playing with the short PETs, you'd have to absolutely shank it to miss it. So, you know, it's a whole different deal on that. And then, you know, on the kickoff stuff, you know, the guys, they're just better. Now, I mean, they're physically stronger. So, okay. The thing for me, I wish they'd put it back at the 30 so you could get some more returns, you know. So, because look at it now. I mean, I don't know what the touchback percentage is, but, you know, early in the season when it's nice and warm, there's not very many returns. You know, at the end of the year, I'm sure, you know, that'll change, but it would be nice to have, you know, more returns, but I do understand the player safety, you know, issue on it with, you know, no wedges and starting with a line, you know, within a yard of the ball, you know, so I get it, but I miss it, I guess, as a fan.
You know, I think there's been some, you know, sentiment over the last few years that they're going to eliminate the kickoff from the game entirely, and when you look at it, you know, you're putting some guys out of a job, not just, you know, kickers, but it doesn't just affect kickers, it affects return men too. And you know, there's a lot of guys in the NFL that made their bones either returning kicks or covering them.
Oh, for sure. As a fan, I really hope they don't, you know, take kickoffs completely out of it. I mean, it would just be odd. For me, it would feel like you're watching a scrimmage or something, you know. Heck, we're not kicking off today. So that would be, I don't know, that'd be a shame. And to your point, you know, it's not just the kickers. You know, there's coverage guys and returners, absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed about this new extra point the last couple of years, this seems to be what separates the guys who make the team and don't make the team in preseason. If a team is carrying, you know, two kickers in some sort of kicker competition in training camp, you know, the extra point now is not a foregone conclusion. They're actually looking at what these guys are doing on extra points as part of that evaluation.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's a tough kick, you know, and gosh, this is as good as these guys are. You know, it's not a gimme anymore. So, you know, Justin Tucker, I mean, he missed one last year. And I remember watching, you know, saw the, you know, the highlight of him missing. And, boy, crazy wind. It wasn't like he hit it bad. It was just the wind got it. And just the incredulous look on his face. It was like, oh, my gosh. You know, but, I mean, that guy's as good as it gets. And, you know, I think that's probably the only one he's ever missed. Since it changed, you know, which is incredible, you know, because when you look at it now, I mean, you know, missing four or five in a year is not unheard of. So.
Right, and you missed five your entire time with the Raiders in 7 years, which, you know, that's not a whole lot.
Again, apples and oranges.
You
know,
sure.
It's kind of one of those things where, you know, I mean, I look at, you know, that new rule now. It's a different deal, definitely.
It definitely is. You finished your career with the Chicago Bears, 4 years with the Bears. You played against the Raiders a couple of times as a Chicago Bear. Some success, some not success. Was it weird coming back to play the Raiders as a member of the Bears?
Yeah, it was a little strange, you know, but as you know, you've been around the game long enough. I mean, heck, we can't play forever. And, you know, I mean, I was really excited to get to play at, you know, the time that I had in Chicago. Our girls were young, and we had a great time. You know, that, you know, we didn't have a lot of success as a team, but I personally had a nice little run and did okay. So it was fun. And then, you know, getting to play the Raiders, it was great to, you know, see, you know, some of the old friends. You know, that part was pretty cool.
Well, I don't think they cared that one time you beat them with a game-winning field goal either.
You know what?
They were so friendly.
I have to say, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, 96, you kicked 3 fourth-quarter field goals to beat the Raiders. So, yeah, I don't think they appreciated you too much after that.
Yeah, I got a little grief on that, but you know what? That's okay.
Well, it's the game, right? You know, and especially with kickers. You know, one name I wanted to mention, which, you know, I thought was interesting, you know, what happened to this particular kicker, and, you know, it never really happened to you or Chris Barr after Chris finally, you know, found his way. But if you remember Ali Hajishik with the Giants, yeah, he's one of those guys that was set. If you can set the world on fire as a kicker, Hajishik was on his way to being one of the better kickers in NFL history. And something went wrong with him, whether it be a confidence, a technique thing, and he never got it back. Did you ever go through any slumps? I mean, that where you were thinking, wow, you know, maybe I'm not going to be able to do this.
Well, so let me take you back here. When I was in college, we could kick off a tee. So think about going from off the tee, you know, to off the ground. So that's a big difference. You know, now, you know, heck, they start kicking off the ground when they're in eighth grade, you know, a lot of these really good kickers. So the adjustment wasn't such a big deal. And I can remember, you know, thinking I would do it a little bit every now and then during my senior year in college, in warm-ups, you know, hit a few off the ground just to see what it was like. And there was a few times I was like, man, I don't know if I could do this. And, you know, it did take me a little while to adjust to it, that's for sure. And yeah, there were some moments where you're like, man, I'm not sure I can do it, but I got to figure it out enough so I could fool them for a while. That's what I always say.
That name, Ali Hajishik, and then the other name that I remember, you know, we were talking before we started recording, but we were talking about some of the other kickers, you know, Rafael Septien and guys like that. But it seemed like there was always a Zendejas in the NFL.
I know. Well, that was funny because when I was at Washington, Luis was at Arizona State, and Max was at Arizona, and then their cousin Tony, you know, played for the Rams. So, yeah, I was, you know, competing with those guys for years. Absolutely.
So it's like kind of like the flying Walendas, right? The kicking Zendejases?
Exactly. Yeah. I've heard that a few times, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it's been a long time, but now you've got, you know, Daniel Carlson, obviously with the Raiders. I think his brother is the kicker at Auburn, following in his footsteps there. This seems to be a family thing. And then Johnny Townsend, who lost out to A.J. Cole in the punting duel this year for the Raiders. Townsend's brother is following in his footsteps at Florida. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Did you have any, you know, when it came to siblings, was it kind of like what you were saying before, like everybody played everything?
I have a brother who's 10 years younger, you know, so there was kind of a pretty big space in between us. And heck, he was a much better athlete than I ever was. Taller, bigger, faster, stronger. He didn't kick, but so there was no you know, sibling coming along. I have a younger sister, but needless to say, she wasn't going to be out kicking. So it was just me.
So, again, kind of before we started the show, we were talking about this a little bit. When you look at it, you know, the Raiders finally get Ray Guy in the Hall of Fame. So now there's the punter who set the bar for everybody to follow, who came after him, and he finally got in the Hall of Fame. But there's only one kicker, you know, I mean, that was in there for the longest time, and that was Jan Stenerud.
Yeah.
What has to be done to get more kickers in the Hall of Fame? Because you're going to have some guys. You get Janikowski. You're going to have Adam Vinatieri eligible at some point. You got some guys, and you mentioned Morton Anderson. But you know, there's guys that you have to look at for Hall of Fame candidacy here, don't you?
Oh, for sure. I mean, for me as a ex-kicker and looking at it, you know, I look at Janikowski and. You know, I'm sure somebody will do the math on it and figure out, you know, yeah, he made more over 50 than anybody, but I'm sure he attempted more, and rightly so. I mean, heck, if I was his coach, I'd be running him out there too. But what kind of effect did that have on his overall percentage? You know, I mean, I'm just asking the question. You know, because he was still over 80%, which, you know, in my day was awesome. You know, I mean, heck, 80% now is like, I don't know about that. But I think a lot of people, they'll just look at the bottom line, okay, 80%, and, you know, 1,900 points or whatever. I don't know how many points he got up here in Seattle, but I don't think they'll go into the numbers deep enough on Janikowski, in my opinion. And I mean, for me, he's always big on kickoffs, you know, made a lot of clutch kicks, a lot of long stuff. I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer. Vinatieri, I give him A-plus marks for longevity. I mean, are you kidding me? Very impressive. But, you know, and of course he's gonna get a lot of love for the Super Bowl, you know, kicks. And, you know, rightly so. You know, so. But then now, I look at Justin Tucker. And the difference between, you know, the real top guys now and the, say, you know, all the way down to, you know, the 25th guy, you know, the bottom of the league guys, you know, aren't as good, obviously, but the difference between the, you know, 1 to 25 isn't much, you know, and these guys are really good. So it's, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, some of these guys over the next, whatever, 15, 20 years, how they go. You know, I mean, heck, you got to get to the point where you got to get through a season and don't miss a kick. You know, to make the Pro Bowl or something like that. You know, these guys are just amazingly good.
You know, you're absolutely right. Would you be surprised to know that you and Sebastian Janikowski had the same number of Pro Bowl appearances?
That's baloney. I mean, I can remember somebody told me that, and I was like, no way. I never would have guessed that. And the reason why I say it's baloney, it's like, again, let's go back to. You know, I'm sure part of it is, you know, he had good season and the Raiders, you know, weren't so good. And I get how that is. And, you know, the Pro Bowl stuff, I mean, so much of it's just a popularity, you know, contest. Doesn't have anything to do with who's actually deserving of it. And, yeah, I mean, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I'll guarantee you there's three or four other seasons that he darn sure should have, you know, gotten to the Pro Bowl. Absolutely.
Yeah, there was a guy down in Miami during that time period when Sebastian was picked for the Pro Bowl. It seemed like he was competing with this guy almost every year, and that guy from Miami kept getting the nod over Sebastian, and Sebastian did get to go 1 year. The same year you were voted to the Pro Bowl, 91, that was your all-pro year as well. You were 29 of 34 on field goal attempts and 29 of 30 on extra point attempts that year.
Yeah. Hey, I had a good year.
You think?
Yeah, that was a pretty good year for me. Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, that was coming to the end of the Raiders playoff runs at that time, coming off the AFC Championship game in 1990, and then 91 was the wild card loss to the Chiefs. Was there any particular place that you like to kick more than any other, let's say?
You know, Denver was always nice. You know, just aside from the ball traveling well, you know, played there frequently, you know, early in the year where the grass is really nice. You know, it's always nice to kick on a true grass surface, you know, when it's in good shape. So I I really enjoyed kicking there. That was nice. And, you know, Miami or Tampa, any of those, kind of for the same reasons, you know, a nice grass field.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think because of being at sea level and maybe the humidity and whatnot, it might not be conducive to good field goal kicking there.
Ah, from my perspective, it was always nice just because you could stay nice and loose. You know, I mean, if I was, you know, playing a position and, you know, running around and sweating a ton, I get why that's problematic for guys. But, you know, from the kicker perspective, at least for me, I enjoyed hotter the better, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That way you wouldn't get, you wouldn't tighten up, you know, like those days you were kicking in Chicago, you wouldn't tighten up on the sidelines, you know, when
exactly.
You're not doing much. Jeff, what are you doing now? What are you doing these days?
Well, I work for Sotheby's International Realty, selling residential real estate. Been doing that for, holy smokes, about 18 years now. So took a couple years off after I retired and got into real estate. Kind of one of those deals, you know, when you retire, you're like, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, kind of young to not do anything. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, that's interesting that you did have a nice long NFL career, but you got out of the game at a point where, you know, like you just said, kind of too young to do nothing.
Yeah,
right.
And believe me, you know, yeah, the thought of golfing every day sounds good until you actually try it for a while. It's like, man, yeah, my back hurts, my knees hurt, yeah. can't do that either. So, yeah, you got to get it all figured out, but we eventually do.
Well, I hope that right hip of yours is okay after all the kicks, right?
Well, I got my right hip replaced 6 years ago, so it now is okay. it wasn't for a while, but you know the drill. By the time you get to be my age, you know, you meet up and talk with all the old ex-players. It's like, okay, yeah, I got a new hip, I got a new knee, you know, but part of the deal.
Yeah, you guys are all having fun at the airport going through TSA because you get to have the special line for special NFL kicker line.
You got it, that's for sure.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast this week, Once a Raider, Always a Raider. It's always great to chat with you and catch up with you and see what's going on.
Absolutely, Jerry. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Good chatting with you.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot of fun for me, especially when I get to talk to guys that I watched play and enjoyed watching play. And, you know, you carried on the tradition of great Raider kickers.
Well, trust me, I count my lucky stars when the subject of football comes up, and, you know, getting to be a Raider was a real big deal for me, and it always will be a big deal for me. I like the once a Raider, always a Raider. People always make me feel that way, so I was lucky to get to play for them.
Absolutely, and that's why this podcast is known as Once a Raider, Always a Raider. Raider Nation, that's going to do it for this edition of the program. I want to thank my guest, great Raiders kicker, Jeff Jaeger, for joining me on the program. For Jeff, I'm Jerry Nack. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network.